Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXE. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. My guest today is Michael O'Hara. Michael is, correct me on the your exact title as far as the your organization goes.
Well, I'm referred to from the city's point of view as the City of Hudson Energy Advisor. And Program Director of the Hudson 10% Challenge.
Great. That's what I was asking.
All right.
So we're going to be talking energy efficiency and government programs to help us get to better energy efficiency and a lot of other energy and environmental issues as well.
Super.
So thanks for joining me this morning. So let's start at the beginning. Or whatever,
you know, somewhere near it.
The spot near the beginning. This program, you just wrapped up the city version of the original grant that was provided to help the city get to an energy efficiency that it had not achieved previously.
Almost. What was wrapped up is essentially the lighting upgrade portion of the project. I organized a set of energy audits for the city, which included a look at the buildings themselves, and identified a pretty big list of potential improvements to the windows and the insulation and all of the other characteristics of each of 10 buildings, and put that together into a task list for the Department of Public Works, which they can chip away at over the next year as part of their regular maintenance budget and achieve significant savings with very little outlay on the part of the city, and with a return on the investment that's quite attractive, given even if you were to hire outside help to do some of the work. Mm-hmm. The lighting upgrade was organized through our electricity provider, National Grid. They did a separate lighting audit and then proposed to do the change out of the lighting fixtures that were inefficient. The city agreed to do that. And the crews that have been working their way through all of the city buildings just finished City Hall on Monday, and all of those 10 city buildings are now ready to go. The project involved hundreds and hundreds of light fixtures, almost every light fixture in every building. At what the city will eventually pay off over the next 2 years, a cost of about $27,000. But one of the interesting facets of the project is that National Grid subsidizes the cost of the materials by providing a discount based on the difference between the energy use of the old fixture versus the new fixture, and then finances the project over the course of 24 months on the electric bill that normally goes to that building. So in this particular case, it worked out very well for the city because the amount of savings that will be generated by the reduction in electricity is more than the 1/24th of the cost of doing the work to make that happen. So from the city's point of view, the cash flow effect was nil. And at the end of the 24 months of the financing period, the city will start to save $12,000 a year in electricity costs.
That's great. And what's in it for National Grid? Why do they participate in this program?
There's a couple of different reasons why the utilities all over New York State, including but not limited to National Grid, participate in a use reduction program. One is that they are incented to do so by New York State Public Utility Commission, which has asked them to make efforts to improve efficiency. Now, one of the interesting things that you learn when you study this is that it's less expensive to improve the efficiency of a given building or system than it is to generate more electricity to meet the wasteful need. So expressed in another way, the least expensive way to provide for more energy use is to become more efficient. So it works in favor of New York State taxpayers who are all participating in programs like this, that they can reduce impact on their communities of new power plants and facilities. And it also happens to work in the favor of the shareholders of the private companies who do provide the energy that we use. If you have to build a new power plant, the cost could be upwards of $3 billion apiece for a conventional natural gas-fired power plant, and several times that for a nuclear power plant in today's environment. If you can push back the date at which you would be required to meet demand by putting in a new power plant, that saves the shareholders the upfront cost of financing the construction of new plant and systems. So the reduction in peak demand through the implementation of efficiency and conservation measures saves the shareholders money and is good from a bottom line point of view, even if the federal and state governments weren't involved.
So the grant that you're finishing up, that that was something that was part of the stimulus program, President Obama's stimulus program, that money was fed to the state for these types of programs, the energy efficiency program. And can you tell us a little bit about how that got started?
Sure. The stimulus program that was started, passed back in 2009, had a number of different components to it. The biggest part of it, as many people know, was a very widespread tax cut, which was spread out over the course of the years as a reduction in people's payroll taxes. So a lot of people didn't notice it, but it certainly was the biggest part of the stimulus program. The other parts had to do with grants towards fixing up our national infrastructure, bridges, roads, etc. And one part of it was the work having to do with energy efficiency and alternative energy. And that's what came through the New York State program called the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, or NYSERDA. NYSERDA was the channel for the energy-related monies. They put it into a pre-existing program called the Energy Efficiency and Block Grant Program, EECBG, that we've seen resurfacing over the years in announcement from NYSERDA. So when we saw it, when Victor and I actually were reviewing the available grants and services available from New York State that would help us get things done here in the city of Hudson, we noticed this particular one, applied for it, and when it was awarded to the on behalf of the city, when the city was awarded the grant, they hired me to implement it.
So, I mean, just so people are clear, we didn't apply for it directly.
We pulled together the data that then it was a grant only useful for municipalities. It's not as individuals. So City of Hudson was the awardee, and they then need to hire outside contractors. The terms of the grant actually prohibited it from being done by city employees. So they were required to go out to the outside world to hire somebody to do it.
Right. And with the help of Mayor Scalera and Council President Moore, the grant writers that are on retainer for the city, we put the applications together in a very short period of time. I think it was like two weeks or something, 3 weeks,
right,
before the deadline. And so it was almost Herculean that we actually were able to do it.
It was a good team effort, yes, because it had to be done as all of these grant applications need to be. They have a very particular format that they have to be in. And it makes all the difference in the world if you just dot all the I's and cross all the T's and make it look nice.
And write the grant to the scoring method of the application.
Oh, indeed. I mean, you have to follow the rules, and you have to sing to their tune, and it worked.
Yeah. In that case, we actually applied for three, which was even crazier, but we
right.
but we did manage to get the one.
Right. Now, this grant was also applied for by a number of other New York State cities that I'm in touch with: Red Hook, Kingston, Warwick. They all applied for and got similar grants, mm-hmm. and are all embarked in similar programs.
So the first phase was energy efficiency for city-owned buildings. But then there was a second phase that you implemented as well. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. The other part of the statement of work that I put in for the project was to implement a public outreach for the rest of the citizens and building owners of the city of Hudson and the surrounding area, which supported them in their need to reduce the energy use of their homes and businesses along the same lines as what we implemented inside the city, beginning with understanding the nature of their buildings, how they're working as a system from an energy point of view, and how to reduce the wastage and improve the performance of those buildings.
So you started a website as well.
Right. The program came under a name that I had developed when I was working with Sustainable Hudson Valley out of Kingston, which is an idea we promoted all over the region, which is to encourage individuals and families to reduce their energy use by 10% over the course of a year. So the program is called the Hudson 10% Challenge, in which the city of Hudson challenges its citizens and building owners to do that, to reduce their energy use by 10%. And my job is to support people in making that happen. The response has been very encouraging. A lot of people have started working on the program, which involves at first just declaring, yes, I pledge to do this. Put a stake in the ground, set an objective, which is understood for many years now to be very important in achieving what it is you want to do, to set a definite and achievable objective. The next part is to identify where you are so that you know how far along you need to be in order to get to where you say you want to be. What 10% of what?
Mm-hmm.
So on our website, the Hudson10%Challenge.org, which is all spelled out, no numbers or percent sign, the applicant or participant can download a couple of charts that help them make sense out of their past year or two's worth of energy usage. You collect a year or two's worth of bills, which you can easily do online if you don't have the paper ones lying around, from National Grid, and we instruct people on how to do that. And lay out the charts and take a colored pencil or a crayon and just put a dot where the number of kilowatt hours or therms of natural gas intersect with the month of the year. And pretty soon you have a picture of the energy use over the course of a couple of years. And then as you go forward into 2012, as you get a bill, just look at that number, make another mark on the chart, and you'll be able to get some feedback about how the energy use for each of those months, January, February, March, relate to the energy use of the previous years. Now, of course, comparing May to June doesn't really make any sense, but May this year to May last year does start to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
With that information, you can also apply for a free home energy audit from New York State. There are dozens of contractors in the region who are certified by by New York State and are part of the NYSERDA program, and they get paid through New York State, so it doesn't cost the homeowner anything. You just fill out a form, which includes the need for your energy data that you just collected, and send that into Albany. They send you back a letter with a code number, essentially, that you give to the contractor that gets them paid. The home energy audit is a foundational practice in this whole thing, next to tracking your energy use. You can understand where in your building improvements can be and need to be made, and at what cost and at what value to you. So with that roadmap in hand, you can then decide what sort of improvements you want to and can afford to make. Now, in addition to the free home energy audit, New York State also subsidizes the support for financing those home improvements that may be more expensive than you want to pay out of your own pocket. So for projects ranging in cost from $3,000 to $25,000, you can get 3.5% loans through a facility that is very quick and easy to apply for, that doesn't depend on home income. It just is based on the energy effect of the home improvement that you're proposing to do. So you have to have the audit first so that you have those numbers in front of you. But having identified where the best value is going to come from what home improvement, New York State will help you carry through on that. Mm-hmm. And in addition to the major projects, there are also dozens of things that anybody can do around the house if they're at least a little bit handy with a caulking gun or a piece of weather stripping that can improve the energy efficiency of the home with very little cost. And then there are things that you can do by behavior change alone, just by changing the way you use your appliances and the way you operate the thermostat, for example, that really don't cost anything and are a matter of raising people's awareness so that they are on the lookout for ways to improve that energy efficiency that may occur in their house that might not be a factor in mine. Mm-hmm. So awareness raising and consciousness and goal setting first. Identify where the potential problems are. Get help. My website gives links to all sorts of practical information about how to do things and other resources that somebody might need. And then start acting. That's the point, mm-hmm. is get people out of thinking, oh, the bill is too high, into thinking, I have control over at least a bit of this part of my expense mm-hmm. picture. And in this period of economic stress that we're all going through, here's something you can control.
So, I just want to assure everybody, because I'm up to the stage of getting the energy audit. I have, in fact, when I leave the show today, I'm running home and meeting the contractor who's going to be doing that. But it's very easy to do this. It's not complicated. It maybe sounds a little complicated. It's not complicated. Collecting the data. I don't save my bills. So, in fact, I don't even get bills. I'm on the paperless billing with National Grid. But the going to the National Grid website and getting the data there for 2 years worth of bills is an extremely simple process. So it's just basically click, either register. If you're not registered with the National Grid website, you just register. If you are already registered, you just sign into your account, click a couple of buttons, and you have a printout of 2 years worth of history on your bill.
Victor, that being said, I also recognize that there's a powerful force of inertia at work in all of us. And even though you and I know that it's easy to do the data collection and to fill out a form, it's all too easier for people to say, oh, that sounds a little complicated. I'll get to it tomorrow. I started discussing this process and procedure with a group of friends and colleagues of mine back in May, my pilot group for this program, and it was months before some of them got around to actually doing a simple thing as we're discussing. So I have created what amounts to a short project-oriented support group, which I'm going to implement in several places over several dates here in Hudson. The most obvious of one is Wednesday evening on the 25th of January. I will be leading a workshop at the Hudson Opera House from 6 to 7:30. The point of the workshop is to have people sit down in the same room, take the electric bills in hand, and make the charts together. I'll provide colored pencils, and we can answer questions. We can make sure that people understand the process, and then together we can fill out the darn forms for the NYSERDA home energy audit, mm-hmm. and I can just put them all in a big envelope and send them into to NYSERDA in Albany and get the process started, get this functional stuff out of the way, as well as give some tips about how people can start doing things at home that don't require the more sophisticated understanding of how to do it.
Mm-hmm. And there are real advantages to people to do this. I mean, if you're a building owner, obviously, and you provide heat, this is a great way of just reducing your costs and making your property more valuable. as far as rental income. If you are owner occupied, obviously you're paying for your own heat and electricity, and you would be saving money there. So it's a direct benefit to you. The threshold for getting a free energy audit is quite high. I mean, over $200,000 a year in income
before you start to have to pay anything.
Right.
And once you get up beyond a certain household income level, you start to have to pay some portion of the total, maybe $50 rather than nothing.
Right.
And you get up to a certain point for fairly wealthy people where you'd have to pay all of $250,
right,
which if you're at that income level, you're not going to be worried about.
Right.
The program, by the way, applies not only to single-family homes, but also to owner-occupied multifamily homes up to four units.
Mm-hmm.
So if you occupy one of those apartments, then this program is all the same for you.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get up into non-owner-occupied residential or mixed or totally commercial buildings, there's a different program application that you need to go through, but we'll help companies and building owners that want to do that as well.
Mm-hmm. And the benefits as far as the financing goes is tremendous. I mean, if you know it's
3.5%. If you look at the information from the various banks in the area for a non-secured home improvement loan, you're getting up into 6 and 7%.
Mm-hmm.
So the odds are, if you remember what I was talking about in terms of the city's use of on-bill financing from National Grid to achieve the lighting retrofit, the odds are that with many home improvements for energy efficiency, that the savings can overcome the monthly payment of a financed project. So that means from a cash flow point of view, you could easily wind up in a situation where at the end of the retrofit of insulation or what have you, you could easily wind up with less monthly expense, even including the monthly payment against the loan that you took out to do the project.
Let's see. We're going to take a break for a moment. This is At Issue. I'm here with Michael O'Hara, and we're discussing energy efficiency and the 10% Hudson 10% challenge.
Energy challenge. Right.
We'll be right back on At Issue on WGXC. Back. Excuse me. This is At Issue on WGXE. We are here every Wednesday at 10 in the morning for an hour, 10 to 11. And today we're with Michael O'Hara. We're discussing energy efficiency. So on the break, we were just talking a little bit about lighting and appliance use, appliance electricity use, and those kinds of things. So why don't we talk a little bit about lighting to start with?
Sure, sure. Lighting in our buildings is responsible for in between home and offices about 20% of the energy use. So it's obviously very important service that is provided to us by the use of electricity. That we take for granted. The Edison invented light bulb that's been with us for over 100 years was a marvelous invention in its time, but it has also been referred to more recently as a small heater that just by coincidence happens to give off a bit of light. Only about 2% of the electricity that is sent to a light bulb winds up being emitted as visible light. The rest of it is wasted as heat, which mm-hmm. you can quickly find out by trying to unscrew a light bulb that's already on.
Right.
It's very hot. If you're familiar with the process of brooding baby chicks, what do you put in the box with the baby chicks? You put a light bulb, which is enough to keep the little things warm. So in order to move away from that wasteful technology, there are a number of other technologies that have been either perfected or are in the process of being invented. And the most widely available of these today is the compact fluorescent bulb, which was developed over the last decade and is now widely sold and quite reasonable in price, especially when you consider the life cycle cost of any of the lighting appliances that we use. For example, if you compare the cost of a typical 100-watt light bulb over the course of its life and compare it with the same with the life capacity of a equivalent compact fluorescent bulb, the initial purchase price is a minor part of the cost. The longer-term cost is made up with the cost of usage, the cost of electricity to make that bulb work. The compact fluorescent bulb winds up costing you, let's say, over 5 years, about $20. The incandescent bulb, about $60. Mm-hmm. So the real cost to the user is mostly in the electricity usage. Now, the compact fluorescents are not rated on watts. So the old association we have with wattage equals brightness, equals the amount of light I can get out of it, needs to be adjusted in our shopping habits mm-hmm. so that when we go looking for a bulb to replace one that's burned out, we look at the little label on the old incandescent and it says 60 watts. Oh, okay. Well, where do I go to get a 60-watt bulb? And I look at the package of the GE Energy Smart compact fluorescents I have in my hand here.
Not that we're endorsing GE Energy Smart light bulbs.
Yes, it just happens to be the way they package it here. It's a 15-watt bulb that is guaranteed to last 7.3 years and is also labeled for the ease of the purchaser as a 60-watt replacement. So 15 watts versus 60, quite a bit of energy use reduction. And over the course of those 7.3 years is described as saving $39 in energy. Now, of course, they're making a statement that's good nationwide that assumes a certain cost per kilowatt hour of 11 cents. And here in New York State, we pay 17 cents on the average. So the actual savings will be quite a bit more. So the person who's going to buy this has a couple of other characteristics that they need to look for on the box, one of which is the light appearance or what is sometimes called by the engineers the energy temperature. The typical the typical incandescent bulb, because it's essentially a heat generated, has a light that is almost like a flame, and so it's a warm kind of reddish feel to it, and we've grown accustomed to that feel. It's something that we appreciate. It's not quite the same color temperature as standing outside in the sunlight, which is much brighter and whiter. But it's what we associate with a living room, a softer color. So if you look on the box, there will be an indication of what part of the spectrum is preferred in that light. And these particular bulbs have a warm color characteristic. If you're looking for light for a workspace, an office, let's say, then you'd be more interested in a higher color temperature, which would tend toward the blue side of the spectrum, and is what we would normally associate with the 4 and 8 foot long fluorescent tubes that you'd see in most offices or schools, where you're working with paper. You want a brighter, wider light, then that's what you'd look for. So make sure you look at the box and see what the color temperature is, because one of the complaints that people make about fluorescent light is that it's too sterile, it's too institutional. Well, you can get away from that if you just take a look.
There really
at the box.
Have been tremendous improvements in the color.
Oh, indeed.
In the color of these things, and for if you've tried a compact fluorescent before and were really unhappy with the light, like the times have changed. So
Indeed.
you really can get a light that approximates an incandescent bulb out of a compact fluorescent or an LED bulb as well.
Right. Now, there are some fixtures that compact fluorescents really won't fit in. If your lampshade is very constrained and is designed around the typical shape of a incandescent bulb, then you may have some trouble fitting some of the larger compact fluorescent bulbs into it. And to that end, the various manufacturers have come out with smaller and smaller implementations of the design, so that almost any light fixture nowadays will accommodate one of these things. The screw that gets it into the base of the lamp is the same size as the incandescents. Of course, if you have
referred to as an Edison base,
indeed,
same.
It's the same size and shape with the screw threads that that fits into a normal light fixture. You will still find some chandeliers, other specialized fixtures, the inside of your fridge. They have a whole different size of connector, which won't work, and keep on using the incandescents for those. No harm done. The other difference that you'll notice in the compact fluorescence bulbs are the ones that have a very obvious screw shape to them. The curlicue that looks to me almost like the soft ice cream. So If you don't mind that look, then certainly most of them are available in that way. But some of them are available with a kind of a soft cover on them that makes it look like an incandescent bulb. So it also further insulates the bulb against breakage. Now, much has been made about the problem of breaking these bulbs and the exposure that causes to the householder of a tiny bit of mercury that's contained in these lamps. Now, mercury is essential to the process of the way a fluorescent lamp works, and it's always been that way. All of the long tubes that you see in your offices and schools are made in exactly the same way. It's just causing concern because many people hadn't had fluorescent lights in their home. So I think we can get past the concern for a couple of different reasons. One is, with reasonable care, you're very unlikely to break one of these things over many years of usage. I've been using them for a long time. I think I've broken one in 20 years. But that being said, with reasonable care, use a wet paper towel to wipe it up, put it in a plastic bag and in the trash. You know, don't let your pets in the room and your kids crawling on the floor while you're doing it, which is something that you really ought to not do even if you were to break an incandescent, because there's broken glass on the floor. But the other aspect is how much mercury are we avoiding by reducing our energy use in this particular instance by essentially 4/5 of what it had been in that particular fixture? Most of the mercury that is coming out into our environment is spewed out by coal-fired power plants, which release the mercury which is naturally occurring in coal. The mercury then condenses in the rain, falls into the rivers and lakes, and is consumed through the food chain by the fish that we later on eat. So much more mercury is contained in a can of tuna fish than you're likely to get out of a lifetime of exposure to broken compact fluorescent bulbs. So for people who are concerned about mercury, the real place to start looking is in your fish consumption.
So there's been a big change in LED lights as well, and which use even less electricity per watt, I guess, and the price has come down on them tremendously. They were tremendously expensive even just a year ago, and they, and they have now really been embraced, and the price is now almost on par with the compact fluorescents, at least not quite, but
well. The price calculation has to do with the initial purchase price. And as we started talking about before with compact fluorescents, the anticipated life of an LED fixture gets into 25,000 hours. Now, if you look at your typical daily usage of any of the lamps in your house, this is a lamp that is going to last as long as your refrigerator, your stove, quite a bit longer perhaps than your television, and it's if you think about it as an appliance rather than as a service or a paper towel that you use once and throw away, then the life cycle cost now takes on a whole different story. If you could acquire a stove, let's say you go get a load of firewood, and it costs you $10, and then you're confronted with the possibility of buying a stove and an oven, and it costs you $1,000 to put in a proper gas or electric stove, you might balk at the price. But you're going to keep that stove essentially for probably close to a lifetime, and it wonderfully outstrips the value of all those $10 loads of wood. So similarly, the dollar for a light bulb that you used to think was a reasonable price seems to be normal to you because that's what we're used to paying. So when you're confronted with a light bulb, in this case this LED that I got from the shop and paid $15 for this is a 430 lumen lamp, which is it's not the brightest thing. It's something you can use for a table lamp, and you know it if you give it as a gift to somebody when their baby is born, it'll still be burning when that kid goes to college. So that means
makes a good gift.
Oh, indeed, indeed. So the estimated energy cost of 90 cents a year over the course of that 25,000 hours, that starts to make sense as something you'd invest in.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen this particular bulb on sale as low as $7 or something recently at Home
mm-hmm.
Depot.
I
think they're usually around $11, but they,
right.
But
well, there's buyer resistance, as you might imagine, to paying $11 for a light bulb.
Right.
But if they can get these out into the market and get people used to thinking about their lighting fixtures in that way. Mm-hmm. That'll accomplish it a lot. Now, there's a couple of other technologies that are still not ready for prime time that are other ways of getting light into a room, and we'll see those rolling out as the demand for greater efficiency carries on.
Not to mention the banning of incandescents.
Well, it's a good lead into a refutation of that story. Incandescents are not being banned as much as some people think. What the 2007 energy efficiency legislation that was passed during the Bush administration suggests and requires is that the efficiency be improved. So the lighting manufacturers all got behind this and said to each other, let's collaborate and make standards and share technology that has to do with improved efficiency. And so they've developed more efficient incandescent bulbs that will be rolled out starting this year, starting in January, because the 100-watt bulb was first affected by the rollout of the law. So 100-watt equivalents, which are more efficient incandescents, which, of course, because they're more efficient, won't take 100 watts of electricity to do their job.
Right.
There'll be something more in the line of 83-watt will start rolling out this year, as well as more efficient halogen compact lights that you'd use in smaller light fixtures. So there's a whole lot of...
A lot of under-counter things.
Right, under-counter things. There's a lot of technology that's being rolled out that was underway for the last 4 years since the legislation was passed, in which many companies started doing before the passage because they anticipated the need for it.
Mm-hmm.
So Sylvania, GE, all the big lighting companies are already shipping product.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind whether the implementation law has been dealt, the consumers are going to see these on the shelf, and they're going to benefit from them one way or the other. Now, so the light bulb hasn't been banned. We have several years to go worth of the rollout for the lower wattage bulbs to be affected by the efficiency requirements, and we're not going to be required to use compact fluorescence if you don't want to.
Right.
So if you're especially concerned about this, then run down to your local building product store and buy a case or two of incandescents. God bless. if that's what makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, take advantage of government-sponsored increases in efficiency of your refrigerator, mm-hmm. for example, which today's refrigerators are five times as efficient as those that were sold just as short a period of time as 30 years ago. So the largest energy consumer in your house, if you have a relatively new one, is much less so than it was just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Air conditioners have achieved efficiencies of a similar scale. Home heating systems, boilers, and furnaces have all been improved to the point where you can now buy a furnace or a boiler that gets up into 97% efficiency, which is the level at which it converts the fuel that it burns into heat for your house. So on many different fronts, energy efficiency is proving to be a benefit to society, and as well has created work for the manufacturers and distributors of these devices, the installers, the home improvement that comes out of that. It's a job-creating movement that we're looking at here. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention in the context of this discussion is the difference between energy efficiency and energy conservation. Turning off the light when you leave the room, a light of whatever technology you choose, is choosing to use less of that energy. So
it's the best way to go, folks.
Well, it's very cheap. Yes. Putting on a sweater rather than turning up the thermostat and heating every room of your house when you really just need to heat you is conservation.
Mm-hmm.
Driving a little bit slower on the highway.
Not happening.
Well, driving at...
I'm just kidding.
Yes, driving at 65 miles an hour, you are pushing through the air of the surface you're driving on, and that's the major cause of your fuel consumption. Going up to 75 miles an hour increases your fuel consumption by more than 10%. So just backing off a little bit on the gas pedal can save you a lot of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all examples of using something less in order to spend less money. Energy efficiency, having a car that can go 65 miles an hour and use less fuel than one with a bigger engine and a more bulky presence and moving through the air, less streamlined.
Like a Hummer.
Well, yes. The difference between a Hummer and a very streamlined hybrid vehicle is extreme, getting 10 miles an hour versus 50. Mm-hmm. My 2003 Prius routinely gets about 45 miles to the gallon, mm-hmm. even when I drive 65 miles an hour on the highway.
Incentive to get a Prius, I guess.
Well, but it's not really, because if you
like to go fast,
if you just drive your less sophisticated streamlined vehicle a little bit slower, then you can save a lot.
Right.
So that's all part of my program, is alerting people to the possibilities inherent in conservation, as well as pointing out technologies that will enable them to do the same work, the same effect, but less energy used to do it.
So I'll remind everybody, you're listening to At Issue on WGXE 90.7 FM and on WGXE.org. Next week on the show, we'll be discussing the Board of Supervisors, the new chairman at the Board of Supervisors. There's been a public fight over the minority leader position, and that will have been settled by next week, and we will be discussing that hopefully with the new minority leader. And we'll also be putting out an invitation to the new supervisor, new chairman of the board, Supervisor Pat Grattan. Hopefully he'll join us next week as well. So I think next week's show will be a big show. It'll be enlightening, and a lot of what's been going on in the background that has not been public will have been brought to light, let's just say. So I hope you'll tune in next week. Coming up next is Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera English can be heard here on the station every weekday at 11 o'clock. And so stay tuned for that. That's coming up in 10 minutes. And so tell us, we have about 8 minutes left. So what else would you like to let the listeners know about the programs and about energy efficiency in general, whatever? The floor is yours,
sure.
Mr. O'Hara.
The other thing that I've been discussing with a couple of local nonprofit organizations is the possibility of getting some young people trained in how to do simple home improvements that will affect the energy use of those properties. Mm-hmm. And there is funding available through NYSERDA to do job training. Workforce development, as they sometimes call it, that will get people ready to do things that are not going to require a engineering degree or a craftsman's level of skill, but putting in insulation and putting up storm windows and weather stripping, caulking, and so forth for people that need that work done, that perhaps can't afford a larger project, but want to get the little bits and pieces of tightening up their home done. And so that concept is being developed, and we're putting together a proposal that I hope can start working later on this year. Mm-hmm. The other aspect of the program is going to be what to do with people that don't have a computer to access all of the information that I've been talking about. And mm-hmm. towards that end, we have a package available for people that we'll send out who enlist in the program that includes a wonderful volume of information about all the aspects of home energy conservation and efficiency mm-hmm. That they can sit down and read on good old-fashioned paper.
Mm-hmm. Imagine that.
Indeed. So the promotional effort that I've put into this is taking a number of different forms. The brochure about the program, the Hudson 10% Energy Challenge, went out in all of the residents of Hudson's water bill this month. The residents can fill out a little form in the back of the brochure that tells us their name and address and what sort of building they live in, and if they want to volunteer it, the rough indication of the household income, which helps us guide them towards particular programs that might be income associated. And that gets them connected to the program, gets them on my mailing list, which then gets them connected to the flow of information about how to do this.
So I wanted to clarify something. So it's called the Hudson. Tell me again what it's called.
The Hudson 10% Energy Challenge.
Okay. So, but people from other municipalities could also participate in the program.
Oh, goodness, yes. I've made presentations at several churches, synagogues, the Chamber of Commerce, the Rotary Club, and certainly all of the members of those organizations overlap into the surrounding community. So there's no harm done in extending the reach of the program to the sound of my voice.
And
wherever WGXC can be heard, right. Is certainly somebody
who I've heard it
who
in
could...
Albany, by the way. I was really impressed. It was cloudy that day, though, so I think it was sort of the waves were hugging.
Tropospheric scatter.
Me. Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, like, even for your presentation at the Opera House, I mean, it's open to everybody. It's not a closed meeting in any way.
You don't have to present any evidence of city residency in order to enter. What I do want people to do is to register ahead so we know how much materials to bring. So
okay.
If they could call 828-4369, that's 828-4369, to let us know that you're intending to come. And if you could pull together the information that we're talking about ahead of time, your bills for the past 12 or 24 months, then that would prepare you for taking advantage of the work that we have to do.
And again, there's instructions on your website on how to do that, and the website is at
Hudson10percentchallenge.org, and all of those are spelled out, T-E-N, P-E-R-C-E-N-T, not the number 10 and the percent sign.
Right.
.org, so that's Hudson10percentchallenge.org, and have a look. We're very proud of the website. It enables somebody to walk through the process visually of taking the finding your energy bills, filling out the form, which is downloadable from the site, mm-hmm. Doing your tracking, which is also downloading the graph paper and that's denominated properly, as well as the names and addresses of all the contractors in the area who do the home energy audit, so you can contact them.
And
then
tell us again
help
what
with
the date
decision
is
making. That's January 25th. It's a Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock, just an hour and a half, 6 to 7:30, at the Hudson Opera House here in Hudson between 3rd and 4th Streets on Warren Street.
This is really an hour and a half well spent. It's the opportunity to receive the free energy audit, the opportunity to have access to these low interest or no interest or grants, even in some cases,
right.
To do the work is a huge reason to participate in this. If you're a homeowner and you're struggling and you have trouble meeting just the basic needs of living, this getting involved in these programs is a way for you to really start saving a lot of money and to do what's right for the planet and for right for your city and all of those, all of the sort of altruistic things. But it's going to save you a lot of money on top of it, many of these programs are specifically intended for people who are struggling. I mean, some of the grant programs and everything, and not necessarily struggling.
If we're not actively struggling, if we're actually able to meet our bills every month, we're still conscious of, there, but for some luck go our family,
right.
When we're seeing people lose jobs and so forth. So the point of this is to help the community become more resilient to financial shock.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're spending less money on your normal bills, then if something happens, you'll be better equipped to deal with it.
Right.
So even if you're not now having trouble, it's always good to have some extra cash and be able to respond.
To buy that speedy car.
Yes. Let's not do that. Yes.
I'm just joking.
I understand.
So we just have a couple of minutes. So have we missed something, or is there anything that you in particular want to bring to our listeners' attention?
Well, the the central learning of all of this is to become aware and to take that awareness into action. For example, if you notice that your car's tires are getting a bit worn out, all of a sudden the newspaper tire ads are going to pop out at you, and you'll notice that there's the brand that I usually buy, here's the size that my car takes, ads that you would have just skipped over if you had looked at them a day or two earlier. So similarly, if you start to say to yourself, how am I going to meet my goal? How am I going to get to 10% less energy? And you start to say, look around the room. Those light bulbs. Maybe I can save 2% of my energy use with change out of the light bulbs. Hold your hand up to the window and say, there's a breeze coming through there. Let's spend $20 on weather stripping and reduce the energy loss in my windows by another 3%. You go over to your refrigerator and you put a dollar bill in the gap, the ceiling, the strip that goes around the outside of the door, and the darn thing falls out. Oops, this seal doesn't work very well, and my refrigerator is cooling off the rest of the kitchen. Where can I buy another sealant strip that goes around the outside of that and make sure that the seal is nice and tight? Well, there's another few percent of energy savings, and it becomes like a game, like a puzzle. How can I make the savings add up to a 10% improvement in the performance over the course of a year, and get your kids involved to put up your energy tracking form on the wall and say, okay, kids, here's the program. Take a shorter shower and help mom and dad pay for your education.
There's an incentive. So I want to thank Michael O'Hara for joining me today. As I said, next week we're going to be discussing all the political shakeups and maneuvers at the Board of Supervisors, which are substantial. So please tune in next week for that. And give us the website and the phone number again.
Hudson10%challenge.org or call 828-4369.
It's really worth doing this program and getting involved in this. So I hope that you'll take the opportunity right now to go and do that. Again, thanks for listening to At Issue. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much.